Yeah. So when we have under 10 people, the country's just kind of a black, you know, yeah, just kind of like a shadow.
And then it ramps up into blue and then all the way into red and stuff. And so it's been really fun.
So we've got,
like,
so we got 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, et cetera.
Right.
And so it's just keep adding zeros.
As we pop back into the dashboard then every day is then being like, oh my God, Australia's got pink.
Butterscotch
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 257 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam and I'm the internet tuber.
I'm Sam and I yell at people.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is May 3rd, 20 Blendy. Before we get started, warning! There's going to be, we're going to have profanity.
Just swearing up and down, left and right.
Now, it's always pleasant, you know. We don't get aggressive with it.
They're good
but
curses.
It's in there.
Yeah.
It's in there. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We got a bucket of them.
Oh?
This week.
We got a bunch of money in the money grab bucket?
We grabbed a bunch of people's money.
What we got?
So let's run down the list. Talk Gibberish says, congrats on launching an amazing game that is fun to play, build in, and stream.
Thanks.
So thank you very much, Talk Gibberish.
I'll take your money.
Ribdot says, Hey, B-Scotch bros, just bought Levelhead on Switch and PC. The 10% discount was a nice surprise, but your discounts are no good here, sir. I want to support the studio. Here's all the money I saved on discounts and then some. Thanks for all you do. Keep up the great work.
I like this idea, you know, which great. Is yep. Instead of when you buy both of them at a time, then you actually pay us even more because, like, what a value are you getting?
The old,
you know what I mean?
That's the great. Old anti-discount
mm-hmm.
trick. Potty Gamer says, so excited for your launch. Been a listener since the start. Awesome that you guys could write your own story and escape the initial story that was written for you.
Mm.
Since the launch has you busy, treat your families to your favorite delivery dinner. Keep up the awesome work.
Sounds like I'm getting Thai food from Addie's, and I'm going to be sweating a lot in the coming days.
Get that level five spice.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Chris Gambrell, who says, a little late, but happy launch. I left positive reviews for all of your games, so I no longer feel guilty for having low playtime. I really enjoy your content, and you guys do a good job. Keep up the good work. So thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
And of course, we have a I think it's called a flock of recurring supporters who
a gaggle
who are donating monthly. So thank you all very much for that as well. Okay, so we got to
get right into it. Let's get in there. This is the launch episode.
This is our first post-launch podcast episode.
So this is more like a mid-launch episode because it is Sunday morning.
Yeah, launch is still technically unfolding.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's talk about – before we get into the numbers, let's talk about just launch day. Some surprises. Anything crazy happened where we were like, oh, shit.
There's always
did not know about
there's always there we've were, talked there were a few we've talked about
and,
the
and this was a set when we say seven play we launched on six stores seven platforms because mm-hmm. Xbox Game Pass was Microsoft Store plus yes. Xbox so seven different versions of
yeah.
the game.
So importantly, whenever you launch on any platform, there's always stuff that basically is either poorly documented or not documented, or just has like a sort of a throwaway line in the midst of a paragraph that turns out to be very important. And so the benefit of having, you know, of launching a couple of games is that you start to find all these things that we just refer to as traps, these booby traps that are sprinkled all over the place for you to get your leg caught in and then have to gnaw off in the middle of the night in order to escape. So I think we dodged all of the ones that are hugely problematic.
Yeah, we dodged the bad ones, I think.
We didn't get our leg chopped off in a knife trap.
Definitely.
But we did get poked in the neck.
Or
something.
Yeah, it was sort of one of those like you're running through the woods and there's brambles catching your legs, sort of.
Or like a mosquito bites you and you just got to slap it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, a couple of those. So my favorite ones, I think, are one that we knew ahead of time, which is just sort of fun, which is that to launch in Japan on the Switch, they only launch games at midnight for unknown reasons because that is not a good time to launch a game, but that's when it happens. And so in order to launch on the 30th, you have to launch then on the 30th at midnight in Japan, which, by the way, is 11 a.m. our time.
The day before.
So technically the launch like kind of just low-key started then. And we knew that was happening, so we prepared for it. And we're like, okay. And we knew that wasn't going to be a big crazy thing because Nintendo Japan's featuring wasn't going to be huge, and it starts at midnight. So we're like, okay, whatever. Hardly counts. But then at like, I think it was 2 or 3 in the afternoon or something, someone in our Discord was like, oh, it's available on the App Store. And we're like, what? And we're like, where are you located? Because we don't see it there. And they're like, oh, we're in New Zealand. And sure enough, turns out, because we have our pre-purchases turned on, that launches are automatic.
It just happens automatically.
And again.
Rolled out, time zone based.
Time zone based at like midnight, based on time zone. And so, yeah, we ended up basically incidentally launching just a little bit early on, or I guess technically still on the 4:30, but, you know, rolling across the world on iOS, which was a bit of a surprise. And then I think those are the two major ones.
I think this is a good time to say, to actually define a launch, right? Because when we kicked this off, I said, oh, the launch is still unfolding, right?
Yes.
And I hear you're talking about, well, the game became available in this kind of rolling fashion, you know, depending on platform and time zone and so on. And you also said midnight's a weird time to launch a game, right?
Yes.
But I think a launch is actually the pairing of availability plus visibility.
100%. Right. I'm with you there.
So I think the fact of the midnight launch is irrelevant because that's not the launch. That's one half of it. The other half is the visibility. And you can see that if you look at our stats, being available caused the tiniest, smallest of upticks in our purchases and plays, right? It wasn't until we actually got visibility, so where the store itself would turn over and they would show the game in some big way. And we're still waiting on that from some platforms, which is why I say that the launch is still
unfolding. There's still actually – there's a few things left to actually pop. And so that's what been the fun thing is actually over the course of then launch day was – which is the 30th, which is when all these launch-associated things, so all the featuring, whatever else, are actually supposed to flip on. That was really fun to just hang out and watch for the featuring to pop up on Xbox, on the dash one of the Xbox, on the App Store. So we got some featuring on there. And basically, we ended up getting featuring basically across the board. So almost every single one of our platform partners came through for us, which was pretty amazing, to be honest.
Will be coming through.
So, yeah.
Yes. So big thanks to all the people who came to bat for us in those places. Because one of the things that you know you don't really think about is that whenever you see one of these storefronts, you open up the Play Store, you open up your Switch, you know, whatever it is. There's a lot of games launching.
Oh my God.
A lot. Yeah. Like a lot. There's like, I mean, on mobile, it's going to be in like 1,000 each day, right?
Yep.
And we know that on the Switch, I think something like 20 games came out the same day as ours.
If you look at, and we had some comments about how on Steam, nothing seemed to be happening. And that's true because on Steam, only half of the launch happened, right? We got. It's available, but there's no visibility on Steam.
No visibility.
And if you go look at the places where we could be visible, like the new releases section, there were literally – because we were looking at it on May 1st, I think. There were literally like 50 games just already for May 1st. Mm-hmm. And then – so you had to scroll 3/4 away down this really long page to just find Level Head just like in the middle of this huge sea of games, right? Because there's just so much stuff coming out.
Yeah. And so just being in those lists doesn't do anything because you're just in a pile, right? Yeah. And so we were kind of joking about that dumb line from Talladega Nights, you know, if you're not first, you're last.
Right. It's very true in the world of games.
In that movie, they were like, that doesn't even make sense. You know, you can be second or third. It's like, well, you know, in this scenario, actually, it's true. If you don't have some kind of prominent, permanent featuring for like a whole day or a whole week or whatever – then you essentially will only have, quote, featuring, meaning visibility, the moment that you're at the top of the new releases list or whatever, and as soon as you drop to slot 2, you don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And
because of the rate of games coming out, that happens literally within like 10 minutes.
It's on So you get your 15 minutes of fame, meaning people will see that you're they'll see the slug and the title of your game for 15 minutes. Whoever happens to be looking at the store during those 15 minutes, and then it's gone. So that's something that we I'd say on average we got pretty good featuring, but it was definitely variable across the stores.
And so, unless we want to talk about this later, but this kind of segues nicely into one of the problems that we faced in early access that we're now just facing again, is that we can't get anybody else to talk about it. We got this, the stores are all on board. We're getting featuring. Our players are super excited. We got really high reviews, all of this stuff. And we did all of our due diligence. Sam reached out to 1,000 people. The open rates of the emails they sent them were super high. We can see that a whole bunch of the keys got
redeemed. I know that they redeemed. Saw it. And I know that they got
all saw it. And many of them even expressed interest after, and they actually sent something back. And we heard just crickets from all of them.
Yeah, so
and that's
far,
part of visibility, right? Because visibility, so launching being visibility plus availability, the only visibility that we're getting at all is from the stores.
Yes. Yeah. Which is good. I mean, it's good to have something there.
That's where you need it the most, actually.
But. Yeah, that's exactly where you need it most. Yeah. And of course, we also, we talked about this our first time doing a run of ads as well. So all those ads are also firing at full tilt now. And so
that's the only place you can control your own visibility is by spending money on advertisement.
Yeah. So we've managed to do it through basically our business relationships and our own advertising budget, which is not super big. And so that's one of those hope that does some work for us in a lot of ways compared to some of these bigger launches.
We've been talking about it as spinning up the flywheel, right? So hopefully it's enough to build up enough momentum that the thing starts, moving on its own.
And the big thing for us is that, that sense of – we get this a bit. So I want to actually – before we get into these interesting – essentially these eyeball problems – I think talking about what actually has happened so far is really important. So
yes,
So the launch has been very successful. I'm just going to say it. As far as the numbers we're looking at, in terms of player base, I believe it's roughly
as of right now we're at 45,000.
Yeah,
unique players.
Yeah, and it just keeps going up, right? Which is really nice. And I believe that is on par with, if not exceeding, where Crashlands was in the first week as well, just in terms of raw player count. Right. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that we're in a bunch of these different subscription services. And of course, as you'd expect, those are what's driving a bulk of that traffic, right? And so it's not the case that we are selling individual units for all those. And so it's not the case that we're rolling in cash monies over here, right? Because it's these are part of those business deals that we structured in the background. So
This is all part of the plan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so – but really some of the really fun numbers here as far as what's been happening. So our low point of concurrency now. In other words, how many players that we can detect are playing at the same time is 20 times where our previous daily highs were literally a couple days ago.
The highs are like 50 times or 80
times? I think they're about 80 times higher.
It's
really ridiculous. So we're at 43,000 or 45,000-ish players and about 10,000 get added per day, it seems like, for where we're currently at. So we don't know how long it's going to last, but we'll happily.
That will presumably taper off as featuring turns over and things like that. As we talk about, as we move down the list on the stores, because we're not new anymore, because it's eight minutes old.
So far,
we're looking at about 10,000 new players a day.
Yeah, which is incredible. And then as far as one of the fun things we did, Seth set up a dashboard with our analytics in the back end so that we could sort of watch and see not only the players coming in, but from a platform they're coming in, how many of them, where they're spending their time, and then also where in the world they're located, which has been tons of fun.
And what language they speak.
Yes. And so we're actually able to see essentially, we spent a bunch of money on translations. We translated the game into 12 different languages or 11. Can't remember.
11, yeah. There's 11 12 total. Counting English.
Right.
We translated it into English first.
Yeah. From our minds into English.
Then we translated that.
And so the question was would this be worth it? Is that a good thing to do? Whatever else. And it's been really interesting to see the breakdown of those languages. And we know also that some of this is platform specific, right? So again, if some country has a higher proportion of people who are, say, on Xbox, which means there are naturally more people in Game Pass, then they're naturally going to show up a lot more in the data.
It's also genre specific, which we've heard from our translating team as well as other studios. This is one of those things when we were trying to decide what languages to translate into, where we're doing our research looking into what other people do and why, and what the proportional breakdown is of players on different platforms. But it gets really hairy, right? Because it doesn't actually matter what fraction of players speak a language. It matters what fraction speak the language and then also don't speak English, because then they can get away with using English and that buy games, and that would buy your game specifically, right?
So I think the usual fun example is that Germans are are more inclined to purchase like simulation and like those sorts of games, right? Simulation strategy or something like that. And yeah, then
supposedly,
and if you're looking at Japan, it's like RPGs and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, supposedly there's like some of these almost like cultural, like high level styles associated with the different languages, right?
Yeah.
And so that could also
be something like Germany that it, they're, well, the population is a little bit smaller than some of the other countries on there. It's one of the ones that people always do German because they're more likely to buy stuff.
Yeah, to buy a lot of games, right?
They buy a lot of games. And they do it with actually a higher, because spending power is also a concern, right? Because if you're going to translate a game, if you're going to translate your game into a language that then not that many people actually will buy it and their spending power is low, then you might not make enough money to offset the cost of your translation at the end of it.
So it's super fascinating
numbers.
Yeah, it's been fascinating watching that. And then we also color coded the countries. So depending on the level of the player population in the countries, it's on a log scale that gets hotter essentially over time, right? So it starts in sort of like a purpley black when there's just like one person.
Yeah, so when we have under 10 people, the country's just kind of a black, you know, just kind of like a shadow.
And then it ramps up into blue and then all the way into red and stuff. And so it's been really fun.
So we've like, so we got 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, et cetera.
Right.
And so just, really just keep adding zeros.
As we pop back into the dashboard then every day is then being like, oh my God, Australia's got pink. You know, it's been sort of a fun thing. You see each other sort of typing that into the Discord. It's been really fun. So the worldwide response has been really good. And in fact, the reviews have been absolutely stellar. I'll just say across the board. We got, I think, 90 out of 100 from Gaming Trend, got like a 4.5 out of 5 from 148 apps, and a bunch of other smaller sites also covered the thing.
Player reviews have also been good. We've got, I think, like 4.8 out of 5 on our mobile versions, mm-hmm. and we're just at 100% on Steam.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's been super interesting because we have this game that then what that means is essentially that the game's doing exactly what we want it to do, sort of crushing it actually. And the player base is there, which is also amazing because of course the game is about having a player base. And one of the interesting things that we've talked about is that, you know, we designed it to be able to scale effectively from having what was previously in early access a very low player count every day. Something on the order of topping out like 150, 250 total players per day, to now the bajillion numbers that we have, having a system that actually scales that still feels good even when the player population is super low, which if you ask any of our early access players who got into it, they still felt good. It would take a little bit for things to graduate and whatever else from the marketing department, but the game still felt really good to participate in. And now that's been ramped up to like an unbelievable level. And so Seth, I want you to describe your experience publishing a level yesterday and what that actually – what the cadence of that is now, because it's kind of ridiculous.
I'll compare it to what it used to be first. So it used to be the case that you would publish a level. It would go into the marketing department in the game, and once it reached 40 players, it would graduate. So what it used to be the case is I would publish a level, and then typically after 3 or 4 hours I'd check in and 3 to 5 people had played it, like from my followers.
This is before we're dumping any exposure bucks in, I assume.
Right. So I just publish it and just kind of see. And then I would have to put about 20,000 or more exposure bucks into it because that's about where the marketing department was. And then over the course of the next like 36 to 48 hours, it would accumulate those 40 players. And it would graduate. So it would take a couple of days. And if you looked at the front page at the marketing department during early access, most of the things on that front page were many days old, if not like a week old or more.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally,
And they were moving through. But this also prompted a lot of things, like players would come in and they'd be like, "There should be a way to filter out levels I've already played." Mm-hmm. in the marketing department, because I come back and I play in the morning, then I come back in the evening and I'm seeing a lot of the same levels, right? Those questions have stopped.
Oh, yeah.
And here's why.
Yeah, so describe what happened, because it's awesome.
So we increased the player requirement to 100. So now your level needs 100 players before it graduates. And still with that now, levels are just blazing through the marketing department. So I published a level and I put 15,000 exposure bucks. So 5,000 less than what I had to do, before in early access. And over the course of an hour, I got my 100 players. I got like 20 or 30 new followers. I got dozens of likes. People tipped my level and gave it like 15,000 more exposure bucks. So it like flew up to the very top. And then I graduated.
Do you know how much playtime you generated in that time?
I didn't check that. It was a pretty small level. Mm-hmm. So I think I got like 7 or 8 hours of playtime.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. And so what we're seeing is now sort of the fact that like back in early access, you still had that guarantee that people were going to play your level, but it would just take some time, right? And now we have this thing where if you publish a level, if you drop like 15,000 exposure bucks into it, you're going to get 100 players just like that.
Yeah. And we can guarantee it, which is – so this is exactly what the goal has always been, which is to make a – to make a dang maker game where all of the work that someone puts into their frickin' level can actually be extracted, right? You can actually feel the value of having spent 4, 10, sometimes 20 hours building something.
Yeah. And this makes the follower system work incredibly well because if every level you make, when you push it to the front of the marketing department, if it's a good level that people like, if you just will get like 10 or more new followers every time you do that, then pretty soon your follower list starts to get real big. And and what we've seen was over the course of early access, so I think Specchio is a good example because he was at the top of the followers list. So over the course of the year of early access, he accrued about 200. He just passed 200 followers by the time we launched the game. Over the course of this weekend, he's now almost up to 600.
Yeah,
he's like 580 or 590 or something, and so he's actually now having the experience where he publishes a level, and before he has a chance to like do anything with it and like check it out and see how it's doing or whatever, it's just graduating.
It's gone.
Like it's just getting 100 players and going, and so that was the original goal of the follower system, was to make it so that. If you build enough really good levels, you get those followers, and pretty soon you don't even have to play other people's
levels. You can just build levels, and they will get played,
and they just graduate. So you have an inbuilt guaranteed player base, just like waiting for the stuff that you're making. And we've seen tons of other players who were chilling at like 5 or 10 followers during early access, and now they're getting that 100 followers achievement.
Yeah,
you know, so yeah. Like.
Yeah, and the funny thing is,
this thing is going.
When we designed those achievements, we were designing it based on the ability to also get them while we were in early access. I don't know if you guys remember. And so, like, we didn't build an achievement for getting like 1,000 followers, I don't think, because we were like, we just don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? And like, obviously, we should have, because it's not going to be that hard to do, actually, which is amazing.
It's also the interesting thing too, which is when it comes to achievements, people get them for their own sake, as well as they. Are on the top of leaderboards for the sake of being on the top. And so the larger those numbers get, the more you encourage misbehavior too, right? So yeah, it's one of those sort of double-edged swords of the giving some sort of a reward or visibility for something really spectacular and large is that people will fake it.
Yep.
We already saw this with people making accounts and then having there were like 100 fake Beastcatch ID accounts basically that somebody generated. Real Rumpus accounts, but not ones that were playing Levelhead, right? So somebody just made 100 of these accounts and then they used those accounts to follow themselves. And it looks like there were like 5 other accounts that looked like had the same set of followers. So I think somebody might have made a bot or something. I don't know. But they wanted to push. So they all had like 100 followers. And they were pushing themselves up into the top of the most followed chart, right? Mm-hmm. But the question was, why, right? Because, yeah, they're going to get to the top of that chart, but they've got nothing to show for it because they all had just their tutorial level that they'd published, right?
Right. And so real people coming in might see them on that chart and then be like, what?
Yeah, why would you follow this person?
And then
what's the point of being at the top of that list if – you don't have any levels to showcase.
If you're not publishing levels.
Yeah, what's the point?
And it's so easy to detect because this is
very easy to detect.
This is kind of the universal truth of people who cheat is there's they're so blatant about it.
Yeah, there's no nuance.
Like,
yeah.
There's no attempt to pretend like this was a real thing, you know? So it was so easy to just detect that and stop it from happening. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a funny, like, first thing.
As far as other big numbers and fun stuff today, we're going to be breaking the 10,000 level mark today, for sure. We're already over 9,000.
Oh, yeah. It's worth noting that over the year of early access, about 8,000 levels were published.
Yeah. So basically, in a little over 2 days, we've had
a year worth of levels created.
Yeah. 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 Which has been absolutely wild. There's about 4 levels being published every minute, which is very exciting. There's been 3.5 million deaths as of right now. And that number goes up very fast because level heads
are.
Yeah,
because Sam, you made an infographic yesterday morning and it was like 2.3 million.
Yeah, it was just two.
Yeah.
I think it was just two.
Just 2 million.
Yeah, so it's already up almost double. There's a lot of deaths. And then there's been 2 years spent building levels and 2 years spent playing levels, both campaign and player made so far.
This weekend. Weekend. If you were thinking during early access, if you were like, I've played, 8,000 levels. I've almost played every level ever made. Well,
sorry, buddy.
Not anymore.
That goal is say goodbye to that.
That was one of Uso's goals too. Uso, one of our notorious players, who seemed to have a goal of playing every single level that existed, and I think also made really good headway towards that.
Yeah.
So I think now he will be stymied in his efforts forever with this volume of levels coming.
We've reached critical mass where it's one of the things that statistics you always hear about a site like YouTube or something where it's like 10 hours of content gets added to YouTube every second or something. So there's a certain threshold where content is going onto the platform so fast that it becomes physically impossible for you to see all of it. So Levelhead has hit that point, which means we can make the claim that this game has infinite content.
It does, yeah.
Because you will die before you get to see everything in it.
And importantly, I think if we look at just all this – the insane amount of playtime. So again, 4 years of playtime in a couple of days. There has been one crash.
Yeah.
Which
has actually been there the entire time, but it's such an edge case and it's not even part of the gameplay. It's like it's on one of the web UIs and you have to do this weird combination of things very quickly to make it happen. So
So
it's been very stable.
Yeah. Huge thanks to both the early access players and our own QA because – dang, this was such an easy launch that Seth got to go raid in WoW.
Yeah,
launch.
I raid every Tuesday and Thursday with my WoW guild, and I had sent him a message, a week before, and I was like, "Hey guys, I'm not going to be there. I got this launch, and it's a game launch. And in my past experience, things just go wrong, and hot fixes have to be pushed out, and we have to field a lot of player issues and stuff like that. And man, it was chill as fuck. Like we put the game out and we just got to hang out in the Discord, chat with people, and just watch the numbers. And we just played Levelhead and kind of like just had a great time. Mm-hmm. And then 5 o'clock rolled around. And we're like, I guess we launched it. See you guys tomorrow. And then,
yeah, which has been exactly what would happen. I think it's like I was so hyped, of course, that it was still – I think I did a few things in the afternoon and the evening and I think Adam did as well. But like I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, I was paying close attention to the error logs for web requests because I wanted to see – so there were a few login issues during the day that we had to deal with. But none of them hit huge swaths of people, so they were still relatively minor and easy to stamp out because they're web based, so you can just fix on the web web tech.
And not worry about it.
Done. And so that was really good.
No cert for that.
Nope. Yeah. And then otherwise, I had noticed a few kind of fishy looking things in the logs, so like some errors that didn't have enough information for me to know why they were there. And so I kind of ended up spending my evening adding more content to my error messages and then like just poring over it to try to see if I could spot any other problems. And the end result was that everything that came up was stuff that was fine. Because one of the biggest ones actually is on Xbox for security purposes. We're required for every single web request that comes out to verify that that request came from a legitimate user on an Xbox, right? So So Xbox sends along this little thing that lets you do that. And there was this weird pattern that kept on coming up that was responsible for most of the errors, which is users would be playing seemingly normally, right? They would be sending web requests, everything was fine. And then all of a sudden, all of their requests would no longer have that thing, needed to verify that they were real. And it happened to such a tiny number of players, but every time it happened to them, they would end up like basically spamming the server with requests that couldn't work, right? Because the moment this transition happened, it happened for every request. And we didn't block them when that happened. So they just kept on submitting these requests that would fail. And so they ended up being – so then I was trying to figure out, I was like, is this a problem? Is this because these players are like – no, their Game Pass subscription goes up suddenly, or is it because they are actually hackers and something? Like, I couldn't figure out what it was. And so it's like that was the only thing that was worried, but it took me all night to like go dig into this weird behavior. And it was kind of I think it was the interesting thing about what we saw from this is that at least on the website, almost every error I saw was one of many errors from a single user, right? Not one user making all the errors, but like every error represented like 100 errors from a single user, because things generally went completely fine. But then there were a handful of users who just generated a fuckload of error log noise. And there's that question of every time you – and this is why I hate pirates and hackers so much in this context, is because you can't tell right out of the gate if this is just people misbehaving or if it's your system misbehaving. And so now
And it's like a 95-5 split in terms of like people misbehaving versus actual real problems.
There's a lot of it. Yeah. And at launch, you expect it to be the other way, right? You expect it to be that most of the problems that you see are your fault, right? Which is why
it's just people messing with your shit.
It depends on how trustworthy your pipeline is. I think like when we launched Crashlands, it was true that most of the stuff that we saw was our fault.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Almost everything.
Definitely.
Well, I think it's an interesting sort of additional note to the fact that this launch went so well, because almost every issue we saw was the player's fault.
Yes.
Almost every single one. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Their fault, meaning that they were deliberately trying to break things.
Yeah, or that they were just doing something like a little silly, like
logging into the wrong account.
Like logging into the wrong Microsoft account, so that they didn't actually have access to the game, and then being mad at us because they couldn't log in and that sort of thing.
Right. Which we obviously can't do anything.
There's no way for us to resolve it.
Yeah, I think
this is very remarkable.
Yeah, it went very smooth. The whole team was able to actually just enjoy it. And that was a big thing coming into the launches. We talked to the team last week about expectations for what everybody should be doing and how to focus and stuff. And basically Thursday and Fridays was declared, they're essentially vacation days where you're on call for if there's an actual problem, but mainly we're all just supposed to be hanging out and enjoying the fact that we just launched a goddamn game, right? Instead of having to just freak out constantly. And so it was great. I think everybody was very relaxed. There's a few, like Adam said, a few of those login things, but I think we also had a rule, because I know during Crashlands we were extremely reactive, which occasionally, like Adam said, since a lot of the problems can just come from the player side, it's very easy to like work yourself into an absolute fever about something that is actually not a problem. And so we built
your problem anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we built in some good slowness in terms of how we responded to literally everything. So whether it was like, oh, we haven't gotten featuring yet on the storefront, it's like, it's fine. Just wait a couple. I'll send them an email. Just wait a couple hours.
Yeah, or even a player will pop into like a subreddit or Discord or whatever, and they'll be like, hey, I have this thing that's happening, and I needed this to be fixed, right? And it's very tempting as a developer to then immediately sweep in.
Yeah, be like, oh no.
Be like, oh my god, I need to quickly like engage this person and explain everything and walk them through stuff, but. The interesting truth about this is like most people are actually pretty resilient and resourceful. And so their first instinct is to just pop in and be like, somebody help. Mm-hmm. But then if there's no answer at first.
Yeah, while they're waiting, they go look around more.
Then they'll be like, I'll just keep poking around to figure this out. And then pretty soon they just figure it out and then they're fine.
Yeah.
So there's a temptation to make every player's problem your problem, but the real correct approach is to give people that time to figure things out and look for patterns.
Look for patterns.
So if you've got like 20 people coming in with the same problem, now it's your problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because you've done something that is clearly hitting a lot of people.
Which is what happened when it comes to like the actual like real support issues for the web stuff. There's some issues with people's old Bsketch ID accounts that automatically created a Rumpus account for them, but with an email address that user has since lost access to, right? Has been my number one and almost only support issue.
Yeah.
Because I have not created any mechanism by which players can resolve that problem. And we in one way we kind of washed our hands of it because we said basically the thing that verifies that you have access to the account is your access to the account, right? So if you don't have access to it, that's that.
Meaning your email address.
Email address in the case of Bsketch ID or in the case of Rumpus, however you logged in the first time. But the reality is a little bit trickier than that, right? Because I had a player who is currently logged in on their mobile device because they've been logged in for like 3 years, right? because Bsketch ID logins don't expire. So they've been logged in for like 1,000 years on their mobile device, and they got Crashlands, the freebie on Epic, which we haven't even talked about yet. So they got it on desktop and they're like, oh, but I can't log in because I actually don't have access to this email anymore. And I was like, okay, well, obviously you could just take a screenshot and show me that you own this thing. So I had him do that, but I was like, but I still don't have a mechanism by which I can now like swap your account over. And so basically I've compiled a list of these things into the set of a sort of new support features I'm going to add first thing next week.
Yeah. This basically, this is important note for where we're going, which is actually the first week or two is all that, which is making, again, fireproofing the studio. So saying, okay, so where do we see support problems? Where do we see any critical issues? Patch all that up, because the thing is, if we get another big player wave in the future, which you always hope to with everything else we do, we don't want to again have these sorts of issues crop up, and so that'll be our first order of business.
We want to be hit by new, fresh, and interesting problems.
Exactly. Yeah, not these old, not those old problems.
I don't want to be hit by any problems.
Yeah, I do want to talk about. I think so. As far as a few other just exciting kind of high level things from the launch, I think as far as just that volume of players, the effect of that, and how exciting that is. It's really fun also because when you look at different lists in the tower, so the tower is where all the levels go that graduate from marketing, where they're completely untested. Essentially, they go into the tower as this big database and you can search through it in a bunch of different ways. You can sort and all sorts of stuff. And there's this thing called the featured list there. And so the featured list, importantly, it's important to know what that is, which is actually, we used to call it the hidden gems. And that's probably a better way to understand what it actually is. But basically what it does is it finds levels that are good, that we know are good because of how spicy they are, which is our sort of level of engagement metric, and then sorts them by a combination of that and how many players they have, right? And so basically it's trying to find underplayed good levels and surface those. And so you mentioned that the featured list, the top level when you popped in there, which again is a good level that hasn't gotten a lot of plays.
Underplayed.
It has 146 players on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely wild, right?
Well, and also the fun part about it is – so a lot of now about half of the levels that exist were made in early access. Mm-hmm. During early access, the requirement for graduation was 40 players, which means with this new wave of people coming in, all these old early access levels,
all of them were underplayed.
Yeah.
They're all underplayed, right? So they all get their time in the sun. And so if you look at that featured list, you're going to see a lot of levels from like May or June of last year.
So you get this
year.
Kind of fun bonus for being as part of the early access group that – because a lot of early access players were really worried about like at launch, like am I going to get buried basically?
Or they would make – they made levels like specifically for the launch, right? To try to make sure they got to catch the wave. And it's like, got
because there's this feeling of like getting left behind once the wave comes in, right? Mm-hmm. When the reality was that all the systems that we have in place actually make it so that that you gain a huge advantage from being in early access.
Yeah.
So that – over time, the advantage will go away just as a function of time.
Right.
But it doesn't go away.
Your playtime will catch up.
Yeah, but you're not disadvantaged in any way. And in fact, you're advantaged by having been in early access, but not in a way that feels unfair either, right? So because you just had fewer players. So it's completely fair that we now show we say you're underplayed. So we feature your level until it bounces back out, right? And so it ended up being a kind of a fun self-balancing system in an unexpected way.
Yeah, it's worked really well. I think kudos to Seth for that simulation, because the simulation about how many players we would need to balance the marketing department in the way that we felt was good and fair turned out to be just spot on. We talked about that in the last podcast, I think 2 podcasts ago.
Yep.
Totally spot on.
Yeah, because with that, our rule was like, we want you to get enough players that it's really satisfying, right? But also, you should only need a certain amount of exposure bucks to get that number of players. Because right, you don't have to drop 40 hours into playing other people's levels just to get somebody to see your level.
Yeah. So you need to have churn, otherwise stuff sticks at the top and then the rich get richer and everybody else has to dump 1,000 hours of gameplay to actually show up in that list and so on.
Right. So the metric we used was we said the median exposure bucks of the first 5 pages of marketing department should be 15,000. Because I think on average people are earning 3,000 to 5,000 exposure bucks in an hour of playing in the marketing department. So you're looking at like 3 to 5 hours of playing other people's levels to put your level at the top. So that's kind of the ratio. And the simulation,
of course, for at the top, because it can't just be that it takes you 5 minutes to get your own level to the top, because that's doesn't
make sense. Right. Because the whole point is to generate to that you sort of gift playtime to other people,
so and then they gift you back. Playtime. Yeah.
It's an exchange. And so at that 15,000 mark, we were like, if the simulation said, if we have 100 players as the requirement to graduate, then throughout the day, the median exposure bucks in the first 5 pages of marketing will be 15,000. And it is.
We just nailed it.
Like, just nailed it. It was cool because I put that simulation together and basically like it produced a bunch of charts and stuff. And then I had Adam and Sam come in and look at it. And we talked about like the behavior of players in the simulation. We compared them to our real stats. We modified these little like robo.
Well, the original plan was to actually use the median so that the server would basically every 5 minutes or something just compute it and say, what is the median? What is the median amount in the first 5 pages or whatever? Mm-hmm. And then as soon as we saw that value in the simulation was just directly one-to-one connected to the number of players required to graduate, just like it was just tightly coupled. We're like, oh, perfect. Now we can just get to solve all of our problems at once with the easiest – because the easiest mechanism possible is you just check it against a number that doesn't change, right?
Yes.
And the beauty of that too is that if you just increase that or decrease that, all it does is change the median amount of exposure bucks needed to graduate, right?
Yep.
So we get to control how fast things move through, by just like shifting that lever. And so if it turns out at some point that as a function of scale, if scale goes up or scale starts going back down or whatever, that 100 mark starts to become unstable in some way, like the cool thing about the simulation, though, is it said that basically no matter how many players we have, as long as we're above a critical threshold, this would just always be true, that 100 players
because it's 15,000. Because it's really – it's about the ratio. Of people publishing levels versus people playing levels. How fast are levels being published and how much time does the average person put into
that? And as long as the ratio is constant, then this will always work. But if the ratio changes, which it will change as a function of sort of age of the player base, right? But if it doesn't change by too much, this will still be true enough. So we'll have to keep our eye on it, but it turned out to be pretty good.
Well, and there's another fun outcome of this. And as an economics student, I was a economics major in college. I fucking love this kind of stuff. But one of the things you can now see is you can see time of day supply and demand shifts. Mm-hmm. So I saw that in the middle of the afternoon, sort of during peak time yesterday, the median exposure bucks was actually – it went down to like 12,000. So if you dropped 15,000, then you would actually be on page 2, right?
So you mean ideal publishing time is actually mid-afternoon because that's when
– you want to publish at peak time because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? And which is kind of awesome, right? And then overnight – then I checked back in overnight because, of course, things dropped down and then – by like 6 o'clock in the morning US time is kind of like the dip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The idea there is you have fewer players out right now to actually get stuff out of the department.
Correct.
Right. Yep. So that now you start to get things stuck. And so now you start to get that buildup and flux goes down. And then that means you start to back things up against the top of the cost.
Yeah. So it was up to I think it was 16,000 mm-hmm. overnight.
Yep.
And then I checked in again a few hours later and then it was down to 15,000. Like, so it's kind of like, yeah, if you publish at peak time, you get a better bang for your buck.
There you go, podcast pro tip for Levelhead right there.
If you're really into this, you could create because we have the open API, right, for Levelhead. So you could create a cron job that just basically cron is just on a clock, right? On a timer. So that every hour, 10 minutes or whatever, it just goes and fetches the levels in the top list or whatever and just grabs a median and then plops it into a chart or something, mm-hmm. right? And then you could actually just build that over time and see what it looks like. That would
pick your ideal publishing time. You know? Got to save those EBE. The EBE market's real big.
That's awesome. Yeah, so there's been a lot of really cool.
If anybody does that, cool come to the Discord and share it because I would love to see that outcome.
Well, I do want to talk about just real quickly the critical reviews for the game on a high level. So it's interesting to me because they have been basically stellar across the board. I think both from players especially, of course, really loving it. It's been really fun to see people freaking out. My favorite is seeing people, the same person on Twitter, for example, say something 2 days ago like, "Oh man, check out this Levelhead game," and then the next day be like, "Hey, I published my first level in Levelhead." And then today be like yelling at everybody they know. And people like, "Oh my God, you need to play this game." That's been really fun to watch. It's happened a bunch. Like, there's been a bunch of those people.
Well, it's also a cool thing about the design of the game because the idea is that you're making and sharing stuff that you have made, right? Which means it's even more important to you. Mm-hmm. On top of just enjoying the game, you want people to play the level that you made.
Yeah,
right? So you have this huge incentive to go get other people on board.
Yeah, so that's really fun to see. I think the major complaint that we've seen is actually just about the difficulty, which is something we've talked about a little bit internally. And, of course, we don't plan on doing anything about it in terms of changing anything. But it's been an interesting one as far as – for me, as far as asking that question about player expectations, right? Because in our mind, of course, when we think about the campaign, we think about all the stuff, we want to appropriately prepare people for the reality of user-made content. Which is to say the user-made content is hard because it tends to be very hard. And so the campaign is designed to pretty rapidly, like within the first probably 7 or 8 levels, ramp the difficulty up to a point where you're being challenged literally constantly. And that just stays true just sort of indefinitely. And when you combine that with how fast Levelhead actually is and how complex the maneuvers can become, and then you actually end up with a game that has actually a very high rate of difficulty to it. And that's something I'm not 100% clear on why. I've got a bunch of different possible reasons, but something we weren't able to completely communicate in terms of what players could expect when they hop into the game or when they hop into the campaign. And I think part of it, of course, we talk about the dissonance between the art style and that level of difficulty, mm-hmm. right? It's very approachable looking. It's cartoony. It's cute.
Yeah, if there was like blood everywhere and it was like grainy and
some heavy metal music or something.
Yeah, I think there is a little bit of a disconnect there. But you have other games that are also super hard that are cartoony and colorful and the real issue is not that it ends up being too hard for some people because that's just fine, right? Mm-hmm. It does cause that mismatch between expectations. But I imagine that any game. I don't think it's possible to communicate that effectively enough that you get rid of the problem. I think we could do is if we detect that somebody seems to be sucking terribly at the game, is like pop up a message, is like, "Did you know about slow mode?" there are little things that we could do actually that would very simply help people who are just worse at this kind of game from the outset to be able to stick around longer.
If you play Levelhead at about, I think it's like 80% slow mode,
that's the max slowness.
It feels like Mario. About that point.
it's much more chill.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for. Yeah, just flip it onto slow mode, and that'll
Yeah, but also, I mean, I think the difficulty is appropriate in the sense that it's hard for the right reasons. Yeah. The checkpoint placement in the campaign is very liberal. You'll get past like 10 seconds of hard stuff and you've got a checkpoint. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of universally true throughout the campaign. And so you may have a hard time with something, but you can very quickly try again. It's very Super Meat Boy like, in that sense. That to me is something that I've been struggling with a little bit is this problem of just how hard it is to adjust the difficulty of a platformer. It's like we've got the slow mode, but that's all we've got.
Yeah.
And with a game like Crashlands, you boot up the game and the first thing it says is like, "How hard do you want this to be?" And you just pick like, "Oh yeah, I just want explorer mode. Like I don't even really care about combat and I don't want to die ever." Right. Mm-hmm. And we're like, "Okay, that's fine." And then we just tune the numbers of like how hard you're being hit by things. And it's easy, super easy to move those sliders around. But a platform, the difficulty comes from the structure of the world. So we can't just like,
The only lever changed is speed.
Yeah. Well, in fact, what we actually, from our early access players, will certainly remember the earlier versions of the campaign were much more punishing. There was no repeat checkpoints. There was no armor anywhere in the campaign until like literally three quarters of the way through. We introduced armor as a mechanic, right? And so we were always thinking about it that way instead of thinking about it as a core piece of good design. And so now there's armor everywhere. In fact, once you get really good at the game when you're playing levels, you frequently will be unable to pick up armor because you already have armor on, right? In some of those other earlier levels. And it's an interesting problem. And I'm not sure exactly how to go about thinking about it or solving it. Cause it's like, we do want the game to be more accessible. And it might be something like, so Seth, with that idea of, you know, the pop-up in Crashlands that essentially says, what difficulty do you want? It could totally be possible for us to
kick off slow mode that way.
Yeah, that's honestly, the same way. Just say, hey, you know, what level of skill do you have? A platformer's level head's very fast. You can choose sort of the easier mode, which is 80%, average mode, or the way it was meant to be played, which is 100%, right?
Right.
We could actually do something. That might actually be really smart because it might stop some people from falling out too early.
Fuck,
there it is.
Didn't think about that.
But I do want to talk about one other thing, which is that there's a lot of comments about softlocks. I saw these come up a lot when people were talking about the campaign. Yeah. And this is an unfortunate reality of having a game where the object of the game involves bringing up something to the end of a level that a player can also throw wherever the fuck they want, whenever the fuck they want, because it is actually impossible. The amount of time that went into the first level to make it not possible for you as a player to softlock yourself.
Although there was still one, if I remember right, there was like you did a playtest like 2 weeks before launch or something.
Yeah, I just fixed one
more thing left over. Yeah.
But the two levels that took the most time in the game are the last level, which took 20 hours, and the first level, which took 10 hours. And it's because it's soft lock proof as much as I could possibly make it. At least I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, the last level isn't.
And the last level certainly isn't. Yeah, I don't know.
only the first level.
But there's an interesting problem, right? Because a person can pick up the package and then
softlock here, just in case somebody doesn't know what that is you end up getting yourself into a position in the game that is impossible to win.
Essentially, you hit a checkpoint.
Yeah.
But you hit the checkpoint.
You saved a bad state.
Yeah, you saved the game in a bad state so that whenever you reset to the checkpoint, you still can't win.
Yep. Yeah, I'll give you another very good, easy example of this, which is I watched a streamer pick it up. This is actually a week ago, so before the launch. And she's like a Kaizo Mario streamer. She was killing it, right? But at one point, she jumps up on top of something, and all you need to do is sprint to the right and jump over some fireballs. For some reason, just kicks the package into the fireballs, okay? So now the package is hanging out in there. And then runs over and touches a checkpoint that she did not touch beforehand.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Because she like jumped over it. And I'm like, I can't do anything about this.
Only solution is, I mean, one thing we're getting so many ideas here. One option here is to add an extra toggle to checkpoints to say that like a checkpoint requires the package before it will be active, you know?
So they have like a little package icon on it or something?
Make a soft lock proof checkpoint where you have to have the package.
That might be nice.
But that even wouldn't do it either because the package is not the only piece of state in the game.
Right? Yep. No, there's probably more possible ways to soft lock yourself in level head than there are atoms in the universe.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah,
it's a chess game.
It's literally impossible. So the only really – the big one that I saw from – so I think this slow mode thing would be really fun, this assist mode. Having that be a concept of difficulty that we can just turn on would be really cool. Mm-hmm. But I think the other one that I've seen that is totally valid is the fact that – and something we struggle with a bunch is that the camera will sometimes – if you hit a checkpoint late on a moving camera level, then now you'll just get – when you spawn, the camera will just annihilate you. Just repeatedly.
Yeah, you'll have like maybe two or three frames to get out of it.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yep. And so I have an idea for how to fix that, which is just to use two cameras.
Boom.
Wow. So you get to the area where the checkpoint is, you can hit the checkpoint, the camera's stopped. It's fine. Once you get going again, use a different
camera. Instead of having the camera whiz past the checkpoint.
Yes.
First camera goes to the checkpoint, stops, you hit the checkpoint. Then the next camera picks it up, and then you go from there. Yeah,
that makes sense.
So again,
which isn't a universal fix, though, right? Because that doesn't prevent players from making this exact same scenario.
Oh no,
nothing can. So it's there's a lot. Well, and this is to kind of zoom out a little bit, you know, this is just an expression of making a game that has a bit more – that basically entrusts the player more.
Yes.
With their own fate, right? So we give you this package and we say, you got to get this to the end. and then they throw it off a cliff and then save the state. And then the only thing that anybody can truly say about that is that's their fault.
Yeah. Yeah. But right? The thing is, like, especially like, early on, it's going to feel like it's the developer's fault, right?
Well, right. I think when they haven't yet learned the relationship with the package, that's when it's still our fault, right?
Yes. But once they know
– they get it.
It's the balls out of our court.
Yeah, it's their problem.
And the same thing goes with building levels, you know, is the onus is on the builder of the level to be thinking like a designer, mm-hmm. and to think about the ways that their player might get soft blocked, but in a way that is out of the player's control. I heard some people talking in the Discord about the problem of people making levels that require you to get all of the gems. So they'll lock the goal behind a gem gate that requires all the gems, but you won't see that until you've beat the whole level.
Yeah. Right? Oh, so yeah. Like, I played a couple of those.
You go all the way through this incredible gauntlet. Yeah. You get to the end and you just can't win. And then you have to start the whole thing over.
Yeah. People are definitely going to quit that. So then it's going to have an artificially inflated – it's going to have a low replayability score, a low spice, and a higher difficulty than it actually has.
Yep.
Because nobody will complete it.
So there's tons of interesting things that we are seeing and learning from this. And so as far as like what's coming next, you guys want to talk about that? Should we talk about
what's happening? Well, I mean, I think what's next is we just talked about a couple of fun things we'll probably be doing actually because I like all these ideas. the important note here is that we're waiting to see what happens over the course of the entire launch month. To really be able to know kind of what the future of Levelhead holds. And beyond that, though, we're going to be – like I said, the one thing we do know we're going to do is, of course, do some form of an update. So we have plans for one that we're going to be putting together.
Our worst-case scenario, if things don't pick up and we don't get more coverage and all that kind of stuff, and if things start to decay already, mm-hmm. is that we still put out one update. That's mm-hmm. our worst-case scenario.
Yeah. So we're guaranteed we're definitely adding some stuff.
Yeah, and it'll be some pretty wild stuff because we've had a couple of ideas we've been sitting on for a while that I think all of us are very excited about now.
Yeah, because I think the goal of the next step because so much of getting the game out was about polishing off what was in there, right?
Yep.
And finishing the UI stuff, like finishing everything that wasn't the gameplay itself. But there are these handful of just wacky ass ideas that would just fundamentally change stuff that mm-hmm. I don't know which or if any that we'll end up actually putting in this update, but they would be so fun.
I'm pumped. I'm stoked. Yeah. It's going to be ridiculous. So we're going to do that. And then we'll be, of course, continuing to push on making the game more and more successful over the next couple of weeks here. We should get a little bit more featuring this week from some of the storefronts and kind of see what shakes out over this next little bit. So I'm really excited. It was a very good launch weekend, frankly. Tons of players, really, really positive reaction, and the fanaticism in the Discord is reaching new highs, which I absolutely love to see. It's been tons of fun to see it actually work. Like to see someone publish a level, put the exposure bucks in, and like boom, you just generated freaking 10 hours of playtime and you got 20 followers. Like what more could you possibly want out of a creative game? You know?
The dream of the game was to be the first and only maker game where we can guarantee that the things that you make get seen by
people. Well, I mean, talking about this whole thing that we were talking about earlier, right? That the levers that we can pull when publishing our own game are basically the game itself and advertising dollars. Those are the two levers we have. Everything else is the game hits the market and then maybe people cover it, maybe they don't, maybe people want it, maybe they don't. We have no control over that part, right? Yeah, there's no input-output relationship that exists for us to make a game be successful. It's not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that for like big budget titles that have flopped, right? Where they've spent
they have all the money,
$5 million in advertising.
They get all the coverage. Even. Yeah,
exactly. All the coverage too. Like, so it's not – you actually just don't – there is no control at that point. And so what we wanted to have – the experience we wanted to create in Levelhead was basically the opposite of the experience that we have as game developers, right? Which is that you actually do have a direct input-output relationship that if you play other people's levels, then you get to have other people play your levels,
mm-hmm.
right? Just one-to-one. You have full control over that. And that was the experience we wanted to create for people. And it looks like we did, which is just stellar.
Yeah, I'm super happy with it. I'm also just beyond, I think this is, we usually do our town halls on Fridays, which we also did this past week. And it was really fun hearing from everybody on the team about the experience. But I think most importantly was just the level of pride that the team has in how we delivered our goods real good.
Yeah,
in the scenario.
We delivered it real good.
Yeah, because like, again, launching a game without where your lead programmer just gets to go play video games at 5 o'clock. Everyone's just kind of chilling. Just
yeah, yesterday I handled like a couple support requests in the middle of the day. I didn't like with Crashlands. It was literally, I'd wake up the moment I wake
up. Oh my
up,
God.
Up,
yeah.
I didn't even have coffee yet. I would sit down, handle a bunch of support requests and like figure out what to do next. Then go get coffee and then come back and do that some more with Levelhead on Saturday morning. I got up and I was like, I'm going to go feed the cats and like play with them for 15 yeah. minutes, you know, like get them running around. Then I went outside and went on a run and then did some weeding. And then I came back and my wife was like, I'm going to go start doing this 2 week hit routine. Like, do you want to join me with this? And I was like, well, I just went on a run, but sure, why not? You know, so I did.
Sure,
that.
I got time.
I just launched the game.
Then I got showered and cleaned up yeah. for the day. You know, now it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's going to be some support requests waiting for me, so I should go handle those. And then there were like two, you know.
Amazing,
so then
I
just,
right?
Just dealt with those. Then went on about my day, you know, so.
Yeah, because it's just a normal-ass Saturday.
It's just a normal-ass Saturday.
Yeah, so I think.
Things are just happening now behind the scenes.
Yeah, huge kudos to the whole rest of the team as well. So, you know, Sam, be sure, and Jordan for working their butts off for this in the past.
And all of our QA testers as well.
Yes. And then our whole stable of remote QA testers who really, I mean, they were, it was so funny the last like month or so, because they were digging deep to try to find something wrong with the game, which was good, you know, also tons of fun to see. And so, yeah, I think all of us are absolutely thrilled with the way we were able to deliver this game, with the player response so far, with the business outcome. And so what we're hoping to see then is that the sort of the daily, you know, the daily player engagement just stays super high, and that we continue to get some good featuring and stuff from the stores, and that the game kind of picks up even more steam over the course of this month. And we'll kind of go from there.
Hopefully on Steam specifically.
Yeah, no kidding. So Steam gave us jack shit.
Steam.
We did not get very much activity there.
That's a fair one. Yeah, someone did pop into the Reddit, and this is part of the reason why I made that infographic on Saturday, because I saw someone ask a question in the Reddit, like, why is no one playing this game? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then he referenced
a lot of people play this game.
The Steam DB charts. And I was like, oh. So
and this is that important. I think it's because, you know, a lot of people who listen to this podcast are fellow game developers. I can't stress enough how true it is that a launch is the pairing of visibility
yep.
with availability.
Yes.
And on Steam, we were no more visible basically than we were for early access through launch. And you can see that in the charts, right? If you look at our players coming in, if you look at our sales,
we're actually less
literally
visible because we
we're actually less visible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because So despite the fact that we launched the way that normal people would think about it, we basically didn't on Steam.
Correct. So I'm still
there's no difference between pre and post launch on Steam.
That's what I'm hoping to achieve something with in the next couple of weeks here, depending on what happens to players. So
but this is important because if you're a developer out there who's just like, I just need to get my game out, right? Like,
nope,
just gotta get out. No, that is not. You need to get it visible.
Yep.
That is the actual problem.
Yeah, release and launch are two different things. Don't you dare get it confused, because it's not going to be good. So we'll see what happens in the next couple weeks.
Do you want to hit one or two questions?
Go a little bit
over time since it's a launch episode.
The launch cast. Let's go.
Okay. So for those who are new to the podcast.
Welcome.
We take listener questions over at podcast.bsketch.net. So this week, the highest voted question is from Waddles TNT, who says, what are your thoughts on troll levels?
I love a good troll level.
A well-designed troll level, yeah.
But that's the problem, because most troll levels—
it's really hard.
Yeah, it depends what you mean, right? Because when I think about a troll level, what that actually means to me is something that subverts player expectation. So Trap Adventure, if you watch that video about Trap Adventure and then you can make a level in Levelhead that feels like that, you've made a troll level, it is nailing it. If your version of a troll level is something that's just annoying to play, it's not a troll level, it's just shitty.
It's just a shitty experience.
because like when you play a troll level, we built one of these in the campaign, right? One of the very last levels, Wait What, is a troll level that does a whole variety of different things to the player when they think they should be doing something else entirely. Even stuff like if you just stand still in certain places for a little bit too long, then something just appears and flings you into a pile of spikes, right? and importantly, like, you know, when you think about the delivery of these things, I think bumpers, if you're making troll levels in Level Head, bumpers are like one of the greatest things because you don't need to kill someone. If you just move with them, you just fuck with them a little bit. it can really, it generates the same sort of feeling. And just murdering someone.
The response that the player has to have has to be something, it has to be like, what? And then like a chuckle. Right?
Yes.
Like that's,
yeah.
If that's the response you can get, then that is a good troll.
Yeah. And so usually just killing someone outright, not the best. So in the case of wait, what, for example, like I could have just made you catch on fire, for example, if you were standing too long in that initial bumper zone. But it's much funnier if there's a pile of spikes sort of over there that you have. Why would you ever walk over there? You're not going to touch it. And then this bumper comes up and just flings you into it. There's something very funny about it. And so I think when you think about troll levels, it's about subversion of what the player is thinking they're going to do. And so it actually requires a lot of really good design thinking.
And it's very hard because it also has to still not feel unfair, because the unfairness part is where it starts to suck and you start to just hate the level and then it's just a bad experience. So you somehow have to be tricking the player constantly while not making it feel unfair. It is very, very hard.
It's about pulling moves that once the player sees it, then they understand, oh, I know why that happened.
Yeah, I can avoid it.
And then next time they can avoid it as opposed to just being trapped in a perpetual death spiral.
Yeah. So levels I personally don't like the most are the ones that require just tons of really tight jumps where there's just like you just can't – just every jump is super tight and you can't mess it up a tiny bit. Otherwise, you could get hit by whatever the spike is or something. That sort of thing, like those aren't trolls, you know, those are precision levels.
Yeah.
Like I'm just not a fan of that.
And I think precision levels, I think that's just a different thing though, because a precision level is there's a subset of people who love that kind of thing because they get
it's extreme skill mastery.
Precision. Yeah. There is nobody who loves a bad troll level. Mm-mm. They're just garbage.
So you got to nail it if you're going to do it. You got to commit.
Definitely.
You got to nail it. And it's going to take you three or four times longer to make
it. It literally does. That wait, what level? Oh my God. The number of switches in there. I think that level and the final level are the two heaviest campaign levels in terms of optimization problems because there's so much going on because you have to fake it. You have to fake everything. And so that requires using tons of switches to create the illusion, you know? Wild.
All right. So final question for the day comes from Captain Jazz, who says, before the release of Level Head, Bumper Stock Shockley Fluber, which is us, had only released games and content either made in-house or contracted out due to the fact that the majority of Level Head's content and replayability is being, quote, developed by players other than yourselves. I wager this is a change for you all. Mm-hmm. What is the most interesting legal problem other than GDPR that you've had to overcome because of this? Love you all, and I wish you the best in your launch. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't think we've had any particularly sticky legal
things. No, but the short of it is that we don't have any legal issues we have to deal with because we don't allow users to upload their own sprites.
Yeah. So if you're wondering why you can't like draw your own stuff, that's why.
There are a whole bunch of reasons, but the legality is definitely the worst one. Yes. There's a whole bunch of other really bad ones like moderation and storage and delivery.
Yep.
But so legality is the one where we actually get to lose money and get sued.
Levelhead's all about like the creative stuff about Levelhead is actually completely designed to also reduce moderation burden and remove any possible legal consequence from people building stuff that we can foresee. So I think that's
even the name combobulator, right? Because now somebody can't name a level after some other game or after some level in a game or whatever. Exactly, right? And now it actually everything becomes everything becomes just like wordplay and stuff, which is then
– it's fun poetry.
It's just fun poetry and it's just kind of always allowed, right? So basically every mechanism in the game kind of protects us from legal implications of copyright.
Somebody is making a Tetris inside of Level.
Yeah, but they can't call it Tetris.
They're just calling it like Hard Light Fall game or something like that. We tried to be pretty clever about keeping everything in the clear so that ourselves and our – because like think about it as a player too. You know, you make something that's like an homage to some other game And in theory, we are subject to the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So as a bulletin board where people can make their own content and post it to our servers, then if let's say like, I don't know, the Pokemon company or something mm-hmm. comes to us and they're like, somebody remade Pokemon inside of Levelhead and we're issuing a DMCA takedown notice for this particular level. Then we have to respond to that, right?
Yep. And we have to take down that level.
And we have to take down that level, and that really sucks for the person who made it. It doesn't really hit us at all because it's just a very easy thing for us to just remove that level.
Well, we have to have infrastructure for it and, right. and all that.
But that sucks, right? You like yeah. if you spend a lot of time making that thing and it has to be taken down. But I think fortunately because of things like the name Combobulator and a lot of other things that it gets obscured enough or it's just like far enough away from the source material if somebody's making like a fan homage to something, then it's clear.
Yeah.
You know?
You basically
can't. Oh, yeah, so, it's just definitely in the clear. Yep.
Yeah. Which is super good. I do want to say the Freaky Z asked a question which we already answered. So we'll just give that one to him as far as the earning that podcast. Yes. Give us the juicy. Was there an issue with Levelhead's launch? Yes, we told you all about them. There you go.
Yeah.
Done.
There was one. Yeah.
Yeah, literally ish. One. Yeah. So,
okay. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. So we'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting this podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running, especially during this
high times.
During these trying times.
If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net where we have links to the community Discord, a way for you to donate to support the podcast, and links to all of our past episodes. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.